Blog Talk Radio.
You got to listen to the Bob Carson Show. It's about the real deal. And this is Les Leopold, the author of Runaway Inequality, An Activist Guide to Economic Justice.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
I'm Andrew Craig. I'm an investigative reporter and attorney based in Washington, and I've the author of Presidential Puppetry, Obama, Romney, and Their Masters. And I want to encourage everyone to support, listen to, and talk about the Carson's Corner show in New Jersey, which is a pioneering, courageous, and apt voice for progressives in New Jersey that I first came to know in 2009, when he was the pioneering and virtually unique media outlet willing to take on Chris Christie, dig deep, and look at how he had come to power and how he was misusing it. And 4 years, 5 years later here, that's all come to pass.
Hi, this is David K. Johnston, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
Hi, this is Harry Kaysen, member supporter of the Zeitgeist Movement. As Zeitgeist members, we know that it is virtually impossible to find sources in the media that speak truth to power. Well, Carson's Corner does just that, and it is one of those special places where you can find out what is really going on. Not just what the bosses want you to know and think. So listen in and hear some truth at Carson's Corner. And oh, by the way, be sure to check out all the Zeitgeist and Zeitgeist-related films you can find on YouTube. We've got a world to save.
This is Greg Palin, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book, Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores, and you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hey, this is Frank Schaefer, author, writer, New York Times bestseller. But I'm here today because I've got a new book called Why I'm an Atheist Who Believes in God. And I'm also on Carson's Corner because corporate media is so one-dimensional in terms of the kind of things they cover that they couldn't comprehend a discussion that would begin with a statement that implies a huge paradox. But I think there's a lot of thinking people out there who understand that life is paradoxical, and Carson's Corner is one of those places you can discuss it. So thanks for being with us.
Good evening, listeners, and welcome to Carson's Corner with the election boycott advocates, stumbling on my words there. This is your co-host, Chris Driscoll. Our illustrious founder, Bob Carson, is not going to be with us tonight. He got called in on an emergency basis to one of his many jobs. So we'll miss Bob and go on with the show without him. But we do have here Rainer Shea, our other co-host, who is our most recent
add on to the show. And I'm sure that between Rainer and I, we'll be able to get on without Bob tonight. So, Rainer, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, great. How you doing? How's things going? How'd you do this tumultuous last week?
Oh, in this last week or so, I've been writing, and I also made a video about the reality that the 2020 Democratic presidential primary is in the process of being rigged. Iowa it had so many indications that it wasn't run fairly. I'm also seeing indications that Nevada and California are being prepared to be rigged in various ways. So yeah, we're seeing a repeat of all of what happened in 2016. I'm very interested in seeing which will be the candidate who gets the benefits of having the exit polls, having the reported exit polls not match up with the results that they get.
And we already saw that with Bernie Sanders last week.
Is the elected candidate going to be Buttigieg? I think so.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see. This Buttigieg is hard to read. He's got a lot of shady shit going on in his background. Recent stuff just came out about his affiliation with the CIA, which he denies, but which the current information that's come out show that at least when he was in Iraq fighting America's imperialist war against the people of Iraq, that he had a pretty close affiliation with the CIA and worked with a special team. I guess he was in the Marines, if I'm not mistaken, but his Marine unit seems to have been basically attached to the CIA. So, and that's not to mention all of the racist shit that's coming out vis-a-vis Buttigieg about his time as the mayor of a small Midwestern city, South Bend, Indiana, in which apparently he maneuvered to have 50% of the black police officers on that city's police force gotten rid of one way or another. That's just one of the many things he did to give himself a well-deserved reputation as a vile racist. But anyway, yeah, we'll see if he's the one. It appears that there are some movers and shakers within the Democrat Party who are leaning towards promoting him and are promoting him. That's a good deal of what we'll be talking about in topic number one. Rainer, you've already given us a really good intro into topic number one, the Iowa election debacle, Iowa Democrat Party caucus debacle. I mean, it's not really an election. It's a common misnomer among Americans that caucuses and primaries are elections. What they are is the nomination process, the selection, not election, selection of nominees of the two major parties, and in some cases minor parties. In some states, minor parties are allowed to participate in, have their own caucuses and primaries, but not often. And this is really, I mean, these are private clubs. That's what they are. They're social clubs, social political clubs, masquerading as something else, masquerading as something more official. But no, these are private political clubs carrying out the selection, not election, process for their nominees. And the Democrat Party, as you alluded to this, Rainer, but after the debacle of the fixed primary season by the Democrat Party and their primaries and caucuses across the country, the Democrat leadership even admitted in court that they deliberately fix these elections, these selections, these votes, fix the votes in favor of favored candidates like Hillary Clinton and against candidates that they don't favor, that they don't want being chosen by the caucuses and primaries, most notably last time Bernie Sanders. Now, some great advice in the past has been, you know, don't do the same thing over and over and over again. This was by Albert Einstein. Because doing the same thing over and over again and expecting the same result is insanity. And that seems to be what Bernie Sanders is doing here. Now, lots of people, like me and like others on this show, have told him in the past, hey, the Democrat Party is never going to allow a social Democrat to be chosen for major offices. Chosen as nominees for major offices in its party. It's a capitalist party. It's well known that it's controlled by the capitalist class, and they are simply not going to allow people who are not capitalist candidates to become their nominees. So, last week in Iowa, you know, I've got to applaud Max Blumenthal, the founder and one of the journalists at Gray Zone. Gray Zone does a lot of great articles online. And I've got to applaud Max Blumenthal for his work. He did a couple of different articles last week. I mean, right out of the gate, you know, on Tuesday morning, you know, Rainer, you and I and Bob were talking about this caucus in Iowa last week as it was happening on this show, because it was happening on Monday night last week. And it was just amazing to me that Tuesday morning, there was this great article by Max Blumenthal out on Gray Zone. I think I actually saw it on the Greenville Post, but it came originally from Gray Zone. I mean, that's pretty fast work, you know, immediately after the election. And in that article, he exposes a couple of billionaires. Most primarily, it's a guy. Let me see if I can find this guy's name. It's Reid Hoffman. That's his name. Reid Hoffman. He is the founder of LinkedIn. A lot of people know LinkedIn. A lot of people, you know, have accounts on LinkedIn. It's one of the major social media platforms. And this guy, Reid Hoffman, also used his billions to found a shady Democrat Party front group, basically, what is it called? Trying to remember the name of it here. Acronym. There we go. It's named Acronym. And this acronym group spun off another group, actually a company in this case, that was called Shadow. It's actually called Shadow. You know, I mean, that shadowy stuff going on here, the name is quite appropriate. But the Shadow is a software company, and it produced the software used in Iowa to allow for the reporting of the results by precinct heads or the party officials at each caucus site. The software was supposed to make it much easier to report to the Democrat Iowa offices about the results of the caucuses around. I think they have something like 1,800 different caucus sites where they carry out these caucuses. Caucuses in themselves are quite kind of an interesting way to go about things. It's, you know, you get I don't know 1,800 people or whatever on a basketball court in a local school or whatever, wherever they can find space, and they group up into the people who come, whichever Democrat registered Democrat comes, goes and stands with in a group of supporters of their candidates, and then they go around counting heads, which candidate has enough, and you've got to get a certain amount to even be counted. And the ones that don't get the amount necessary are told, well, now you didn't get enough, so go out and pick another candidate. So they run across the basketball court to find another group that they like. And the result of all this was this Shadow software just didn't work. I mean, it really had so many glitches. People that were using it were complaining all night. Then finally the Democrat Party told them, just call in the results. And they would call, and they didn't have enough telephones to handle the load. It was just a clusterfuck. That's the only word that adequately describes what happened in Iowa last week. Now, the evidence here is getting kind of suspicious that something's going on, that this is deliberate. There's a lot more to this, and people should go to the gray zone. Let me see if I can get that gray zone thing for you. Here we go. It's called The Gray Zone, thegrayzone.com. If you go to thegrayzone.com, look up acronym group that sabotaged Iowa caucus, birthed by billionaire who funded Alabama disinformation campaign. That's one of the articles that goes along with this. It's in reference to Reid Hoffman, Max Blumenthal. Max also did a stupendous interview with his collaborator, Let me see if I can find that interview. That's also on thegrayzone.com. Look for Pushback with Aaron Mate. And Aaron Mate is the host of that online show. It's like a video show. And he did this stupendous interview with Max Blumenthal, where Max Blumenthal further explains this conspiracy. That's the only word we could use, conspiracy. Explains this conspiracy to sabotage the Iowa results. And the result has been that people waited all last week. In 2016, the results were reported, and the finish being reported within 2 hours of the end of the caucus. So by, I don't know, like 9, 10 o'clock at night, they were reporting the result, the winner of the Iowa caucus. That was in 2016. This time around, here we are on Monday, a week later, and they still haven't officially reported the results. And it's probable now that they won't report until after the New Hampshire primary, which takes place tomorrow, which, by the way, Bernie Sanders is said by the latest poll to have a goodly lead in that one as well. So what was the result of that? You know, the Democrat Party holding off reporting on this for more than a week. The result was that Bernie Sanders, who was absolutely the winner of this race, even though Pete Buttigieg claimed that he was the winner even before any results had been reported. So how did he know he was the winner before the results had even been reported? So anyway, it's pretty fishy, Rainer. I have my great suspicions. What do you think?
No, I think that, that even if Sanders were to be able to get enough votes and delegates to be able to earn his nomination, the DNC will pick another candidate because it's been shown that they're legally entitled to. In 2017, they argued in court that as a private corporation, they have the legal right to blanch their primaries in one direction or the other, and the court conceded that point to them. This is unsurprising in a post-Citizens United America where corporations are officially treated like people. This is the reality of American so-called democracy in 2020. There's no accountability for this, and the party isn't going to allow Sanders to become the nominee. I'm very interested, nonetheless, in seeing how this will play out in the coming months. We're clearly going to see more incidents like the one in Iowa and like the ones that we're anticipating in the coming states. We're going to see more debacles and outrages and dirty tricks. And throughout this time, my priority will be on reporting it and on spreading my Leninist analysis of the situation to Bernie Sanders supporters especially. Because my solution to this is to abandon working within a Democratic Party and to build a movement for setting up a new system of government. That's ultimately how we can conquer the rigged nature of bourgeois democracy.
Yeah, bourgeois democracy, which is certainly bourgeois, basically because it's controlled by the capitalist ruling class, but not democratic at all. So-called bourgeois democracy. I don't, frankly, you know, I'm pretty imbued with Marxist terminology, but that's one term I never use. Lenin used it, or something similar. Marx never said, never called it bourgeois democracy, but some Marxists do, and many Marxists in, throughout my life have always called it bourgeois democracy. I just call it plutocracy because that's what it really is. Plutocracy is a system of governmental control in which the richest of the rich control everything. And that's what we have in America, plutocracy. You know, in listening to you, Rainer, I was reminded that I often tell people, you know, the same things about voting in general, that voting in these plutocratic elections is much like betting on fake wrestling. You know, I mean, fake wrestling, we know that the promoters of the wrestling match have determined in advance who's going to win the wrestling match. And yet, you know, there really are people out there who vote, who, not vote, I'm sorry, but close, who bet on fake wrestling matches. Well, voting in American elections is like voting, is like betting on a fake wrestling match. American elections really are fake wrestling matches. They're exactly identical because this stuff is determined mainly through the billionaire control of the mass media, number one, and through billionaire bribes. And we know statistically that in 94% of the candidates for Congress, the winner is the person who got more dirty bribes, more what they call campaign contributions, but in fact they're dirty bribes, from billionaires and multimillionaires and other very wealthy people. That's how you win American elections. That dirty money, that billionaire money, that ruling class, capitalist ruling class money, that's what determines the elections. The elections are fixed. So are we all that surprised to find out that internally within the Democrat Party, in their selection process for nominees, that those selections are also fixed? It's just amazing to me, but you know, there are people who participate in all this nonsense, pretending as though it's real when it's not. Let's just start. Maybe it's easier. Let's just start by telling people who are registered Democrats, give it up. Your party is fixed. The billionaires own your party. They determine what happens in your party. They determine which candidates get selected in your party, and they will use every dirty trick in the book. But usually they don't have to go to dirty tricks. They just basically buy the candidate that they like through bribery, and they give that candidate more money so that that candidate is able to succeed in the elections. It's pretty simple. And since the billionaires also own all the mass media in the United States, they use their mass media to also tip the scales, put the thumb on the scales, to ensure that their candidates get elected and Bernie Sanders gets fucked. That's why, frankly, I, you know, don't have a lot of respect for Bernie Sanders, because although he has some really good platforms, he has a really good platform, some really good reforms that he's out to get. I know those reforms will never take place through his efforts and through the efforts of people who are voting for him and supporting him and promoting him. I know that, because I know that the fix is in, and Bernie Sanders will never be allowed. Even though I mean, every day I still see people who really seem to think that Bernie Sanders is going to win. I mean, even really highly intelligent people who I personally have high respect for. Let's take George Galloway. He's a guy I've met him a couple times when he came to Washington, D.C. to do speeches. I got to talk to him a couple times. A fabulous guy. He's a former MP. In Britain, he's just a great guy. He has a radio show that's also televised that comes on every Sunday that I listen to and watch religiously. It's called The Mother of All Talk Shows. And yesterday, he was talking about this, the same subject. And he's predicting that Bernie Sanders is going to win. He really likes Bernie Sanders, despite the fact that Bernie Sanders is a despicable imperialist militarist, while George Galloway is an anti-imperialist and spent all his time as a member of parliament fighting against British UK militarism and imperialism. But he likes Bernie because Bernie's social democrat, and so is George Galloway. So he's predicting that Bernie's going to win the nomination, unless he put a caveat there, unless it is stolen from him through illegal means. which, of course, Raider, you and I know it's going to be stolen from him through not illegal means, apparently, since it's apparently legal for this private club called the Democrat Party to fix its selection process, which is what it seems to be doing against Bernie Sanders. So, anyway, any more on this, Rainer?
I think we've printed enough.
Yeah, well, we need to come back to this subject because this is going to be top on a lot of people's minds. Certainly, the 24-hour news networks are pushing, and they're going to be pushing this over the next, 10 months or whatever. We're going to be hearing about it a lot, so we'll come back to it. But, Rainer, the next issue is the impeachment trial. And the impeachment trial ended last Wednesday, and with all this other shit going on, you know, I think it was hardly even noticed, but President Trump was acquitted. So what are your thoughts, Rainer?
Oh, well, I think this is somewhat surprising, somewhat not, since I remember a couple weeks ago, it was either you or Bob, who was actually predicting Trump would be out. But Trump getting off scot-free is an unfortunate thing, since evidently he can't be held accountable for for any of his misdeeds, and this whole thing has been a waste of time, a distraction. And I really, for this reason, I haven't been following it, and I've gotten my news about the nature of his crime in this instance from this podcast. So I don't have much of an opinion on it. Hello?
Okay. I mean, I'm full of opinions on this. It was me, not Bob, who thought that Trump would end up being found guilty in his trial. And, you know, we can talk about that some other time. I'll go into why I thought that was going to happen. Obviously, it didn't happen. However...
I got my whole stuff.
Pardon me? Yeah, now, remember also that I did say it wouldn't matter one way or another, that it was inconsequential because no matter what, whether Trump is there or not, they are going to continue, the capitalist ruling class, are going to continue with destroying the world with their imperialism. And in my opinion, imperialism, American-led imperialism, I mean, there are several other countries that are involved in this as junior partners, but the Americans lead it. The American capitalist class leads it. I think imperialism is destroying the world. It is the greatest single threat to humanity in the history of humanity. I think it needs to be stopped. I think we need a socialist revolution globally to end it. And a lot of people agree with me on that around the world. But it's going to go on. It would have gone on whether Donald Trump was impeached or not. All the nastiness of American politics is going to go on, whether he was impeached or not. So it wasn't really that consequential. I think it's more consequential to the globalist wing of the capitalist class who really wants to get rid of Donald Trump. But the other aspect of this is what the Democrats were trying to impeach Donald Trump for. Now, I think it's pretty obvious, should be pretty obvious. There's plenty of evidence that Trump was misusing his authority, his power as president, to lean on Zelensky, the president of Ukraine. And that's what the Democrats were trying to impeach him over, misuse of power. So I think he was pretty guilty at that. But, you know, that's a pretty minor crime compared with Trump's much graver crimes, war crimes, for example. It's my opinion that Trump, along with Obama, along with Clinton, along with George W. Bush, let me see, is that all the ones that are living still? Did I name them all? Anyway, I think all of the living current and past presidents of the United States should be standing in The Hague on trial for war crimes. And I won't be satisfied until they are. I will just continue to speak on this matter. I will continue to urge people around the world to get justice on that, on those crimes. There are many. We're talking about literally, when we talk about all of those current and former presidents, we're talking about literally millions of people murdered in war crimes, innocent civilian people murdered in war crimes. And that's not the only crime by these presidents. That goes a lot deeper. I mean, these are criminal people. What Donald Trump did and was being impeached for is common. Obama did it, and we know his vice president, Biden, did it. All these presidents have misused their power to lean on governments, other governments around the world, to force those governments into line, into supporting what they were, what they want supported. You know what I mean, Rainer?
Oh, yeah. Well, the crimes of Donald Trump, I've seen them piling up throughout these last 3 years, and they show how this bipartisan war party operates. You see how Trump carried out drone strikes in Syria twice that were clearly unconstitutional, and how the Democrats, I think, criticized him for that aspect, but no one pointed out that they were war crimes, and pretty much no one questions the narrative behind them, which is that Assad had committed chemical attacks. This impeachment is another way that the narrative, the series of narratives that support U.S. imperialism gets enforced. It's basically an example of the normal that exists in America's political paradigm, where the crimes of imperialism go unaddressed completely, and the other matters are pursued and sensationalized in their own respects.
Okay. Let's see, what's next on the agenda here? Syria, offensive against al-Qaeda in Idlib, pits Russia and Syria against the U.S. and Turkey, and the terrorists, the jihadi terrorists, and Zionists use civilian airliner as human shield. Now, this was going on last week while a lot of Americans' attention was focused on domestic American politics. Syria was really heating up. And this all is because Russian military and the Syrian military had launched an offensive against al-Qaeda, basically. Comes under a lot of different names, but it all comes down to al-Qaeda, in Idlib province to retake the city of Idlib, which is really the last major city in Syria. that is controlled by these terrorist forces, Al-Qaeda in this case, but Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and so forth, the Muslim Brotherhood, pretty much all, you'll see like 1,000 different names for these groups, but all of these jihadi terrorist groups fighting against the Syrian government in Syria fall under really one of those three major groups, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, or the Muslim Brotherhood, all three of which are terrorist groups. And, of course, the Muslim Brotherhood is the only of the three terrorist groups that actually has any actual roots or history in Syria. The other two groups, Al-Qaeda and ISIS, have only come to Syria after the American imperialist invasion of Syria using using terrorist groups as their foot soldiers, as their proxies. In any case, this offensive was launched. Turkey then moved into the area. Turkey's close by because Turkey, under another agreement that happened last year, has with this zone, this 10-mile zone that goes across a lot of eastern or northeastern Syria and comes over to within 10 miles of Idlib. So the Turks saw their Al-Qaeda allies being literally being smashed by the Russian and Syrian forces. So the Turks came in to their defense, and now the Turks are complaining that five of their soldiers have died. What the fuck do they expect when they come sticking their nose into this fight where Syria is trying to reclaim its last major city from these vile terrorist criminal elements? Turkey moves in defense. And, of course, the United States moves in defense of Al-Qaeda as well. First thing that happens, the United States calls a special meeting in the United Nations to blast Syria, to blast Russia. Russia, by the way, in the United Nations last week called the United States hypocritical in its role in basically in coming to the defense of Al-Qaeda. Now, remember, Al-Qaeda is the group that attacked the United States in 2001, 9/11 2001, brought down two of the most highest buildings in the country. That was Al-Qaeda. You know, Al-Qaeda killed more than 3 million people, mostly Americans, from probably 95% Americans. In that attack, in the attack on the Pentagon, which killed a couple hundred, in the in their attempt to attack the Congress building, the Capitol, which ended up the passengers on the kidnapped the plane that was taken over by Al-Qaeda. The passengers revolted and actually attacked the Al-Qaeda people in the plane, which was being flown by one of the Al-Qaeda terrorists, actually went down in a field, like a cornfield, I think, in Pennsylvania. And so all the people in that plane died as well. All told, more than 3,000 people. That's a similar number to the number of people who died in the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. And when was that? December 7th, 1941. So, you know, pretty big attack on American soil. And yet, Trump, who promised not to do this and who blasted Obama for doing this, promised not to support these terrorist forces. Here is Trump's regime now coming to the aid of Al-Qaeda in Idlib province. Why? Because these terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda, like ISIS, like the Muslim Brotherhood have been the proxy forces fighting the imperialist invasion of Syria since 2011. So, also, while this is all going on, last week at the same time, commercial airliner, a Syrian airliner, was forced into an emergency landing at a Russian airfield, Air Force base in Syria. They were forced to land because the Israeli Zionist fascist government was using that commercial airliner as a human shield. And this is quite common for the Zionists. The Zionists will use commercial airliners as human shields in attacks. And in this case, they were attacking Damascus in Syria, the capital of Syria. So Russia lodged complaints against Israel. And if people have followed recent politics, they'll know that President Putin has bent over backwards over and over again to accommodate Israel, to be friendly with Israel. And yet Israel does this kind of shit and gets the Russian side pretty pissed off. Yeah. I mean, the main reason that Putin wants good relations with Israel is because a large number of Russian citizens who are Jewish have immigrated to Israel, and many of those are still Russian. They're dual citizens, Russians and Israelis, and so they vote. Basically, I mean, basically what it amounts to is Putin is quite influenced by the Jewish vote in Russia because he needs it. So, you know, anyway, he does whatever he can to befriend the Israelis, to befriend Netanyahu, vile as he is. But in this case, it was a bridge too far. So, Rainer, what do you think of the current situation in Syria?
Well, that, what you just said is a lot to unpack, but I've been analyzing the situation in Syria as it's continued to develop in this last year, and what I'm interested in right now is how American power is retreating from their region. Since Trump's Syria withdrawal in October, his partial withdrawal, Trump has said that he's been trying to keep the oil while keeping other troops in Syria, and that apparently was unfeasible. I'm interested in hearing any news. How successful have Washington's latest attempts at imperial plunder in Syria been? I got the sense that after that after Trump made that retreat and allowed Assad to retake control over many of the northeastern places in Syria, that was his next move of trying to keep the oil was a desperate last-ditch attempt at getting a benefit out of this huge project that the empire has been involved in. But Washington's regime change ambitions have failed, and now it's been trying to salvage the situation, and we see how other powers like Russia are now becoming more relevant players.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I was somewhat hopeful when Trump last year, whatever it was, 6 months ago, announced that he was ordering the withdrawal of all U.S. forces from Syria, at least all U.S. Military forces. Of course, you notice, I mean, the number of American espionage forces from American espionage agencies in Syria at that time were actually higher, probably twice as many, as military forces. So, in fact, even had there been a withdrawal of military forces, it would have only been cosmetic, something for show. Because the real, what's really going on there is mostly being controlled by, 8,000 or 9,000 U.S. espionage agents there. They have far more control over that than the military does. The military is basically almost all of the U.S. military's presence there. Other than units that are attached to the espionage agencies, like special forces, but most of the troops there carry out technical roles, you know, helping to do technical espionage, technical observation, that kind of thing. So they don't really serve much of a military purpose, as they do, much of a combat role as people would usually think of military, as much as doing, more espionage role to begin with. You know, Trump apparently totally reneged on all on that promise to have those forces withdrawn. He withdrew them temporarily, just right across the border to Iraq, but almost immediately announced that he was sending most of them back into the same locations because he was not going to, quote, give up on the control of the oil. I think what we've seen there is that that most likely what happened was that Trump got a wild hair up his ass one day and just came out and said, "I'm gonna fulfill one of my campaign promises and remove troops from." Syria, and yet immediately afterwards there was quite a visible shaken response from all of Trump's major handlers, neocon Republican Party neocon operatives who have been placed strategically around Trump seem to have immediately gone into action, and however they did it, however they normally do it, they convinced Trump to back the fuck off on that one. So, You know, I don't think we're going to see that happening. And next door in Iraq, we're not going to see Trump getting out of Iraq either. I mean, they're moving some of their personnel out of dangerous locations and moving them to more secure locations, but they ain't going, despite the fact that the that they have been commanded to go by the Iraqi parliament in a vote, what was it, 3 months ago or so. So, anyway, anything more on that, Rainer?
No.
Okay, so our next point, this one is a fun one for me. Sinn Féin wins Irish parliamentary election. Now, this is something that I never thought I'd see happen. Probably a whole hell of a lot of other people never thought they'd see it happen. Sinn Féin winning an election. Now, this is, they won a parliamentary election in a three-way race. Basically, they won about, I think the figure was 20. Actually, I got it written down here. Let me go look at it. Sinn Féin won 24% of the vote. Fine Gael, which is the ruling party, and the current Prime Minister Leo Varadkar, they won 21%. Fianna Fáil won 22%. So Sinn Féin's the winner of the election. They won more, which means they won more seats in the Dáil, which is the Irish Parliament, than the other two major parties. What this really means is that Sinn Féin becomes a major party. It's something that no one ever thought. I mean, that most people never thought would happen. Sinn Féin, we should explain to the younger listeners, Sinn Féin is a social democratic party, basically has social democratic politics, pretty similar in most ways to many other European social democratic parties. However, what makes it unique is the fact that Sinn Féin, up until the peace that was signed in 1998, Sinn Féin was the, quote, political arm, unquote, of the IRA, of the Irish Republican Army. So it has a pretty radical, you know, revolutionary background. Anyway, once that peace was signed between the IRA and the British government, Sinn Féin was free to operate above ground instead of below ground and operate as an open political party. And Sinn Féin always operated in the north and the south. However, you know, and they even ran in elections in the south back in those days. But, I mean, they would usually get typically like 2%, 3%, 4% of the vote in the South. So here in this race in the South, Sinn Féin coming in the winner in a three-way race with 24.5%. It's pretty incredible. Now, on the political side, what's going to happen? This gives Sinn Féin the ability to try to force Varadkar out. I think it gives them the ability to force Varadkar out and force Fine Gael out of the prime ministership, and to force basically to come up, gives Sinn Féin the ability to try to come up with a government of its own that has 51 plus percent of the votes in the parliament. To do that, they're going to have to cobble together a coalition. They obviously don't have enough votes to do that on their own. And the two major parties have both in the past said that they would never, ever have anything to do with that filthy Sinn Féin terrorist party. However, it's looking now like Fine Gael, which both Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are right-wing, you know, liberal, in other words. They're liberal political parties, meaning that they're on the far right wing in Irish politics. So it really means that in America, too. They're both right-wing governments. Parties, and so Sinn Féin's going to have a time of trying to convince one or the other of them to participate in a coalition government and get anything out of it. We'll see how that goes. But it's kind of looking now like Varadkar is looking like he's going to give in and actually seek to come to participate in a coalition government. There are minor parties that do get significant votes, like the Green Party, the Social Democratic Party, the Labour Party. Sinn Féin will obviously try to get their votes as well, although those parties all together don't have anywhere near enough seats in the parliament to give Sinn Féin a majority coalition government. So we'll see how that goes. But anyway, it's kind of interesting, watching this party that was considered like such a radical, you know, terrorist. I mean, for decades, anyone involved in the in Sinn Féin, the head of Sinn Féin back then, who was actually the head of Sinn Féin up until last year, was actually considered, or by the British government, to be a terrorist, and so no British television was allowed to show him talking in an interview. So when they would interview him, they would have to silence his part of the interview. It's comical, but it shows how ridiculous the British government is. So anyway, any thoughts, Rainer?
I know nothing about Irish politics, nothing until what you just explained. But this is definitely another example of the worldwide trend in populist politics and in anti-imperialist politics. I hope that this election outcome is good for U.S. NATO imperialism, since it's
yeah.
Rebuke to Britain's occupation of part of Ireland.
Right. George Galloway thinks that the reunification of Ireland is now on the table, and that it will come quickly. Now, George is obviously more optimistic guy than I am, especially, you know, because he's the same guy who I was just explaining thinks that Bernie Sanders is going to get the nomination from the Democrat Party, from the capitalist Democrat Party, which ain't going to happen. George thinks that's going to happen. I think it'll happen eventually. I don't know if, you know, I mean, it'll, I think it's still going to take decades to see Ireland once and for all united. But, you know, a significant thing that I think probably no one else has mentioned is that Sinn Féin is anti-imperialist. They're anti-imperialist against the United States because the United States, over the decades, did a lot of harm to the IRA, did a lot of harm. I mean, the United States worked in close collusion with the British government against the IRA. So, you know, there's that aspect of it too. It really it really shades. It's really going to shade politics between the United States and Ireland as well. So we'll see about that. Most of the reason Sinn Féin won was because they're offering a really good social democratic, basically, reform platform that gets better health care. There's a gigantic housing crisis in Ireland, and they are promised to work towards fixing that housing crisis with social housing, with, you know, with publicly owned housing, public housing. You know, it's all good stuff. We'll see what happens. Anyway, finally, on our list of topics tonight, should revolutionary socialists give critical support to Sanders, to Bernie Sanders, Senator of Vermont, independent Bernie Sanders? The reason I put this on the list here is an article by an old friend of mine, guy I've known for quite some time, Brian Becker. Now, some of the listeners may know Brian because Brian has a popular radio show on every morning, 5 days a week, on Sputnik Radio. And so that radio show by Brian is quite good. So I think it lasts an hour, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, people could check that out. But Brian's probably much more known over the years, over the last, 25 years or so, as the director of Answer Coalition, which has been one of the major anti-war coalitions in the United States, and pulled off some really tremendous, really big anti-war demonstrations in places like New York and Washington, D.C. over the years. So he's known that way. He's also known to people who are more like insider, know a little bit more about the politics of the socialist, revolutionary socialist left in the United States. Brian was one of the leaders of the Workers' World Party up until, I guess it was about 20 to 25 years ago. Can't quite remember now the exact year, but it was a little bit more than 20 years ago when the there was a major split in the Workers' World Party. And out of that split came a new political party called the Party of Socialism and Liberation, the PSL, as a lot of people call it. And Brian, you know, along with a few other people of the leaders from Workers' World Party who went with him, has been in the leadership of the PSL all that time, and he's a major spokesman for the PSL, especially when it comes to topics like war, anti-war topics. In any case, Brian wrote this article, published it last week, and is published in the newspaper of the PSL. Which is called Liberation. The newspaper is called Liberation, the website that it has is called liberationnews.org. So people can look for it at liberationnews.org. The title of the article was published on February 4th, which I think that was last Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken. The title is Bernie Sanders Campaign and the Building the Movement for Socialism in the U.S. Now, to me, I found this quite controversial. Some of my friends who read it found it quite controversial because Brian calls for critical support for Bernie Sanders. Now, this is quite controversial, mainly because in the history of the Socialist Workers Party, which the Workers' World Party split from in 1959, and in the history of the Workers' World Party, which the PSL split from, whenever that was, 2002, maybe it was, something like that. In the history of the PSL up till now, I don't ever remember a case where any one from those three political parties ever called for giving critical support to a Democrat Party candidate. Now, I mean, you might fudge that by saying that that Sanders is not a Democrat Party candidate. He's actually never been a member of the Democrat Party. He is listed in Congress as an independent. He's listed on the ballot in Vermont when he runs for the Senate as an independent. However, he is running for the nomination of the Democrat Party. So, you know. Anyway, I found this article quite fascinating. Brian makes some good points. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. I've got to say Brian is one of the smartest guys I've ever known. He is, you know, and I mean, I've had disagreements with him, had arguments with him, debates, whatever you want to call it. But I've never, for a single time, failed to recognize his incredible intelligence. I mean, people who watch him, he does a lot of interviews on Sputnik News or on RT News, on Press TV, which is the Iranian public TV. He does that show on Sputnik. You know, anyone who listens to his show on Sputnik, you'd immediately understand he's a really smart guy, highly intelligent. However, in this case, I think he's making a tremendous mistake, leading his party down the road to ruin. This is very similar to the road that the International Socialist Organization went down over the last 10, 15 years that led them finally to that party disintegrating, exploding, imploding last year. I think he's making a very big mistake. But more importantly, I think it's a very, very big mistake for anyone ever, any revolutionary socialist ever, to suggest that people vote for capitalist political parties or for candidates in capitalist political parties. Now, obviously, you know, the people who are in the PSL and Brian himself cannot vote in the Democrat primaries. They're not registered Democrats. They're registered PSL. And the PSL is also, by the way, running its own political candidates for president. Gloria Rivas, I think her name is, I'm just trying to think of the guy. I'm getting old. These things that used to just come straight into my brain. They leave my brain. But this guy's a very famous guy. He's been in jail for the last like 50 years. A famous Native American activist. Pardon me?
Leonard Peltier, right?
Thank you. Yes, Leonard Peltier. How could I forget poor old Leonard Peltier? Anyway, Leonard Peltier is running as the vice presidential candidate for the PSL. So anyway. Obviously from the logic of this article, Brian is not asking his own party comrades to vote for Sanders because they'll never get a chance to because they're not Democrats. And you're going to have to be a registered Democrat to vote for Sanders because Sanders is not running for president and will not be allowed to run for president. He is running for the nomination of the Democrat Party to be their presidential candidate, but Sanders is not now and never will be allowed to run for president. So basically, this article comes down to Brian is telling registered Democrats, hey, I think you should go vote for Bernie Sanders, which is not quite the same thing as, I mean, it is kind of a critical support. That's what Brian calls it, critical support. In Marxist-Leninist terms, critical support has a pretty specific meaning. And typically, or not typically, always and forever, legitimate revolutionary socialists, legitimate Marxist-Leninists will never vote for or tell anyone else to vote for a capitalist candidate for anything. So anyway, I know you read the article, Rainer, so maybe you'd like to chime in here. Tell me what you think.
The article actually passed me by. I did so many things sent to me by people, but yeah, this article, I guess its thesis at this point, and I get why Brian holds this view because I get why even people on the even a lot of communists. People who consider themselves communists feel like it's worth it to vote for Sanders. I mean, from their perspective, they might as well vote for this candidate who represents harm reduction and expanding social programs for the masses, despite not being a socialist. These kinds of positions don't consider is that Sanders isn't a stepping stone toward socialism. He's an obstacle. There's something called social fascist theory, which says that social democracy is the left wing of fascism, where the capitalist power structure attempts to preserve itself by giving more social benefit to the masses, and so that the power structure can continue to be in place. And Sanders, being being an American social democrat in the modern era, has naturally applied this social fascist logic to our current a dystopic era of late-stage capitalism and imperialism. You see how Sanders has demonized anti-imperialist leaders like Maduro and Kim Jong-un, how he's joined in on many of the anti-Russia narratives, how he's joined in on the propaganda campaign to recolonize Hong Kong by supporting the U.S.-backed protesters there. So for these and other reasons, a lot of communists don't feel like it's worth it to vote for him. They feel like we should abandon the Democratic Party and vote third party for candidates like Peltier.
Yeah. except in this case, it looks like Peltier is going to have to be towing the line of supporting Sanders in these primaries. But anyway, we'll see how that goes. I have a kind of a feeling that this is going to be controversial within the PSL. We'll see. These kind of things usually have a way of spilling out into the public, even though they shouldn't in a real Leninist party. In a real Leninist party, you keep your private discussions private and don't let them become public. But, you know, that's – we'll see. We'll see if it spills that into the public, this discussion. I'm sure there's a discussion going on there. Anyway, yeah, I was a little bit interested, Rainer, in how you would approach this issue, because I know you were interested in the PSL. So it was just kind of interesting for me to hear your take on this. Interesting also that you bring up the Stalinist third period theory of social fascism, which I've got to say, I mean, I'm not a Stalinist. I don't agree with most of Stalin's theoretical works, Stalin's main theories. You know, like Popular Front, I think, was a disaster for the left around the world, and that was one of Stalin's primary theoretical contributions, if you can call it that, to Marxism. But I do think that there is a large bit of wisdom in the idea of social fascism. That's probably a little bit shocking to Marxist-Leninists of my traditional reference, who tend to be critical of Stalin. But yeah, I think Stalin was right on. I mean, that, you know, in fact, social fascism theory wasn't Stalin's theory. Most of Stalin's theories were written and created by someone else, and Stalin just put his name on it. But, you know, in any case, you know, once he puts his name on it, they're his. So, to be fair, social fascism, although it was not created by Stalin, is basically considered a Stalinist theory, and I think he was right. You know, I mean, I've read Stalin's work on social fascism, at least the work that bears his name on social fascism, and I pretty much agree with it. I think that social democracy, as it's called around the world, social democrats, are a lot more dangerous than they at first appear. And when they have been in power, many, many times they've shown their fascist teeth, like when the social democrats came to power in Germany in the early 20s and created a fascist stormtrooper outfit, the Freed Corps, which was the people who ended up arresting Rosa Luxemburg and her close political collaborator Liebknecht, and murdered both of them while they were in jail. That's an example of social fascism, an early example, but I think a pretty good one, and one that communists around the world, revolutionary socialists, should beware of. That is the kind of response you're going to get from a Bernie Sanders in power. We've already seen this from Bernie Sanders in power in his fascistic, imperialistic slanders against Hugo Chavez and Moreno, President Moreno in Venezuela, his other slanders. I mean, there's around the world we've seen a lot of them. But in any case, yeah, I agree with that whole idea that of social fascism. So you didn't really say, Rainer, if you agree with it. You just said a lot of communists, blah, blah, blah. How about you? How about this young communist?
Well, in a lot of words, I did try to convey that I don't agree with Brian's case, and I do agree with social fascist theory.
Yeah. Okay, there you go. Unequivocal. That's how I like it. Straightforward and unequivocal. I'm a straightforward and unequivocal kind of guy. Sometimes it's probably not the best for me. A lot of people think you should be more stealthy, but I can't help it.
I try to be stealthy. I understand there's kind of a difference between your rhetoric and my rhetoric.
It depends a lot on what you feel you're going to face. If you feel you're going to face the deadly fascist onslaught in America, then probably pretty good to be stealthy and have an escape plan. But anyway, yeah, good discussion. I don't know if you have anything else to add to that, but we don't have Bob with us, so just a two-way tonight. I think it was pretty good discussion, Rainer. As always, I thank you for participating, for making the incredible contributions that you make to the show. Thanks to all the listeners for listening. Just want to say join us next week at the same time. I think we're going to be sticking with that same time, 10 o'clock. 10 p.m. Eastern time, Eastern Standard Time, let's see what else. Oh yeah, check out our website at electionboycott.org, I think it is, or com. Jeez, I'm terrible. This is why I usually let Bob do that. Anyway, just do a Google for election boycott advocates, and the website will come up. Also, check us out on Facebook. To get to us on Facebook, you can do a search in the Facebook search engine for election boycott advocates, and check out all the information on us. You should also check out all of Rainer's work. Rainer is a brilliant young journalist, and I heavily depend on his writing, on his contributions that way, and I think you should too. Rainer, maybe you could let people know where they can go to find your articles.
On RainerShea.com, RainerShea.com. Also, I have a Medium profile, and I have a blog called SeeYouIn2020.blogspot.com. You can also follow me on Twitter and subscribe to my YouTube channel, which are created with my name as the profile name.
Wonderful. So that's it, Rainer. So long to you. So long to all the listeners out there.
Okay.